There was no executive session held today, so we will now reconvene the meeting this afternoon and move on to the Finance Committee. Chairman Falcone, please call your committee to order.
Thank you, Chairman Falcone. I now call this committee to order. First item of business is the approval of the previous committee minutes. Do I hear a motion for approval?
I move.
Second.
Commissioner Martin, and second by Commissioner Dixon. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The first committee item number one, update on the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department progress in implementing the Texas Park and Wildlife Department Land and Water Resource Conservation and Recreation Plan. Mr. Smith?
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of things. There are no specific action items resulting from the land and water plan that I've got to report on. But just a couple of things I want to mention. By statute, we're required to provide a report or an update on the activities of our internal affairs office at each meeting. I guess sort of two substantive things I want to mention. You all will recall Jeff Gillenwaters, who was one of our captain investigators. He applied for a position of major with the law enforcement division. This was Raleigh Correa's old position and was promoted to that job. And Jeff, by all accounts, has hit the ground running and doing a great job. So we're real proud of Jeff and his new role, and I'm sure you'll see him in that capacity. We have hired Chris Davis, who was a special investigator with our special operations team under law enforcement, to come on as the new captain investigator with internal affairs. Chris is a very, very bright man and an exemplary officer, and I think he'll do very, very well as part of the internal affairs team, and you'll have a chance to get to know him. A couple of things I just also want to report on. Actually, Mike Jensen is going to, I think, cover the landscape pretty well on the status of license sales. We have seen some increases in April, particularly on the resident fishing, which has been an area that we've been very concerned about. April was really a banner month, and May looks real good too. And so, Michael, share that with you. But we're real pleased on that front where that's going. We made up a lot of ground. Also, our law enforcement team relies heavily on the recreational boating safety grant to help fund specialized law enforcement and outreach and education work. They just completed all of their paperwork and got notice that they're going to get a $4 million award coming back to support the work of the division. So excellent partnership with the Coast Guard, and Ellie does a really, really good job there. Last thing I want to mention, most of y'all on May 12th were at the dedication event for the Game Warden Training Center, which I hope y'all enjoyed as much as we did. We're very, very proud to see that facility get rolled out, and looking at the quality of cadets, it sort of spoke for itself as to why something like that was needed, a real inspiration. That date was also important because at 5 a.m. that morning we rolled out the new automated registration and revenue system in state parks called TexParks, and this was an extraordinary collaborative effort with information technology, George Rios's team, AR, Mike Jensen's team, and state parks. Scott Moore led it from the EO. A lot of folks involved in creating this new system. It is now up and running in state parks. We're in our, I guess, third week. The first day we had a record 6,200 reservations made on that system through the internet. We feel like it's working pretty well. Like any new system, there are always some issues that come up, some inadvertent double bookings or charges, and our team is working aggressively to resolve any individual item that comes up to try to address customer satisfaction issues, and IT is working very hard with the contractor to fix any just technical issues that have emerged. But I had the opportunity to be out last Saturday at Blanco State Park, the first weekend in which it was implemented, and clearly our colleagues working in the office thought very highly of it, very functional. They were processing people very, very quickly, and all 2-1 thought it was a significantly better improvement over the previous system. So great development. We've got a few issues we're going to work through. If you hear any complaints, know we're taking it seriously and trying to address them quickly. But I just wanted to give you that update on that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Committee item number two, financial overview. Mike Jensen and Judy Horsley.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Mike Henson, Division Director for Administrative Resources. And we're going to give you a financial overview similar to what we did at the last meeting. We'll talk about the revenues that came in. We'll look at Person State Park revenues and the boat revenue, then licenses. Then we'll look at how we compare to the comptroller's revenue estimate for the biennium. And then we'll give you a quick budget summary where we're at with the adjusted budget now. And then a couple of notes on the department's natural agenda and the legislative appropriations request process. We'll go ahead and start with State Park receipts. As Carter had mentioned in his introductory comments, we are actually up 2.4%, so we're up about $519,000 compared to this time last year. Out of that, park passes are up 3.9%. That's approximately $127,000. Each of the categories are actually up, so we're doing very well. Carter also mentioned the text park system. We do have some minor issues, but the month of April was a very strong month. And we're anticipating that May so far is very strong based upon the revenue that we've seen come in today. Boat revenue is also up almost 16%, $1.62 million. And as we discussed and presented during the previous commission meeting, most of this increase is tied to the increase in fees that were effective on September 1st with registration. Sales of new boats and used boats have been very flat. So when we look at these figures here, the taxes are actually down almost 6%, about $64,000. Titles are up almost 1%, which is $18,000. And the registration accounts for most of this increase, $1.67 million. And this is the peak period, so we're expecting to have a strong May as well. This weekend is going to be a very peak period to get boats back on the water with the holiday. That was the explanation I got for that. We kind of went over the last commission meeting. What has happened is when people were transferring ownership, some of them were reluctant to actually transfer title until there was enough water to put the boats into the water. So there was a backlog of people holding on to titles. They were having sales transactions, but they weren't consummating that transaction with transferring title until there was water. Because the drought just broke and now so people are putting the boats back in the water. That was a good, very good question that I asked Francis Stiles before a couple months ago, because we noticed that trend as well. It looks odd that the taxes are down but the titles are about even. That is the explanation that she provided. She said that was an anomaly. License sales revenue. This is the same format as the last meeting where we're comparing to both 2009 and 2008. This slide presentation represents all licenses, including lifetime license sales, the revenue. So you can see we're doing better than both 2009 and 2008. Most of that, again, is attributed to the fee increases that took place September 1st. The strongest performers are combination license and residence hunting licenses. This slide, we've added this is a variance slide that shows you the variance from 2010 compared to 2008 and 2009. Last meeting, I didn't have the dollar amounts, but I felt that it would be more helpful for you to be able to see the dollar amount rather than me reading it to you. You can see that we're up, when we include all licenses, against 2009, $3.71 million. Against 2008, we're up $1.67 million. But if you pull out the lifetime license sales, we're up in 2009, $2.6 million. And we're up in 2008, $476 million, which is very good. We get a weekly report each week. The fishing sale licenses and a laundry list of miscellaneous licenses are going up. So this is a very favorable outlook for the department in light of the fee increase that took place in September.
Mike, just a quick aside, 2008 was our banner year, so we do use that as a benchmark, but it really was an extraordinary year, so I just want you to know that.
So overall, we have pretty good performance with continual improvement with fishing licenses. This slide shows you the count, the number of licenses sold. And the interesting thing here is we're tracking almost even with 2009, and we're slightly behind 2008. We're only behind about 1.5%. The estimate was when we increased fees that we'd be behind 2008 by 2 to 3%, so we're actually doing better than we had projected. This slide will show you the variance in terms of the count, the difference in the number of licenses issued. And when you look through the slide and you look down there at the bottom of the other, which embeds within it the lifetime license sales, you can see that a very small percentage of the population, these licenses, account for a significant amount of revenue from the previous lives. For example, in 2009, our lifetime licenses were about 947 more in 10 as opposed to 9, and about 1,050 more as compared to 2008. And most of the number in increase against 2009 is tied to the timing. So we had a huge wave of people at the old rate coming in, and the revenue did not get recorded until the middle of September, so it showed up in this fiscal year. But you can see that because just the value of those licenses, it really skews the revenue figures, which is why it's good to pull them out for you in these slides. This slide here shows how we're comparing towards the comptroller's biennial revenue estimates. And similar to the last presentation, we're tracking fairly well for Fund 9, and we're improving on Fund 64. We're not collecting as fast as in prior years because the BRE, the revenue estimates from the comptroller, increased for oil and gas royalties. They also increased for interest earnings. And the slide that you saw earlier on boat sales and tax, that is also a Fund 9 event. So that revenue, while it's increasing because of the fee increase, it's not increasing as much as if we had the type of boat sales that historically we've had. Fund 64, we're tracking slightly behind the fiscal year, 64%, 67% of the fiscal year elapsed. Again, two of the reasons for the decline is because of the revenue estimates for interest are very high from the comptroller, and the estimates for gas royalties are actually very high. But we are improving. We had very strong months of March, April, and we're anticipating May for state park fees. So we're actually believing that we can achieve the BRE for Fund 64. At the beginning of the fiscal year, we weren't sure that we were going to be able to achieve that. So things are looking favorable for Fund 64 as well. The local park fund, 467, the primary reason that is where it's at is we had a collection of federal funds to the tune of approximately $4 million. So we are going to achieve the BRE there. And the other, that's a collage of a number of different accounts, which includes artificial reef money, and it includes some capital funds for wildlife, and it also includes lifetime licenses, which is why we've already exceeded the BRE. If you notice, the starting budget in February was $497.1 million. The big adjustment that's showing up in the month of April are the bonds, the $38 million that we've been awaiting approval through PPFA and the Bond Review Board. They've finally been approved. Commercial paper has been issued, not the full amount, but the full amount is available for the department to use. So that is the biggest adjustment. There are a couple other small appropriated receipts, two interagency contracts, one with DPS, one with the Historical Commission, that also added to the increase in the adjusted budget. On this slide, this shows you how we're faring when we look at the audit of expense. As usual, because we have almost 3,200 employees, a large expenditure component is salaries and fringe, but also with the bonds that we have, the bond funding and construction work that we have, capital expenditures also accounts for a fairly large percentage of our budget. With 67% of the year elapsed, we still have 53% of the budget remaining. Just want to give you a quick update on the strategic plan. We did meet with the Legislative Budget Board staff as well as the governor staff to discuss some structure change requests. We had a number of cleanup requests, and they were okay with most of those that were just clarifying definitions. We did have a couple of requests for the Inland Division and the Coastal Division, Fisheries. They wanted to merge their strategies. Doesn't look like the LDB want to do that, so we probably will not be able to do that. One of the concerns that we have as a department is transferability between strategies. Historically, that had been 25%, but when they made different state agencies increase the number of strategies, they also reduced transferability between strategies by half. So we can transfer only 12.5% between strategies as opposed to previously at 25%. That could pose to be a challenge, for example, if we have to do a response in the Gulf for kills and spills. And the problem with the LVM accepting that is we've never had an example we could point to as to why we would have transferability problems. We may have an example coming up this summer, unfortunately. The draft of the national agenda has been routed to the different divisions and executive staff will review. And we're getting comments. Julie Horsley will be up next, is coordinating that effort. And the importance of the national agenda, just a quick summary for you, is you know about the land and water plan. That is really the department's strategic plan, vision, operational vision. This strategic plan, which we call the national agenda, is very prescribed. We have to follow a format by the legislature so that they compare one state agency with another. So we have to submit this data in a really detailed structure in order for them to make an apples-to-apples comparisons by agency. So it's important that we do this correctly and that we give them the best available information. This provides the groundwork for the legislative appropriations request that we'll be doing and preparing this summer for the department. So as part of this review, when we get these comments back to Julie Horsley and her team, this will also give executive staff an opportunity to talk to the divisions about potential exceptional request items and to also talk about different rider provisions that might assist the department with its fulfilling its mission and its responsibilities. One last slide, quick update on the legislative appropriations request. We were promised by informal sources at the LBB that we would be getting instructions no later than Sunday, which would be May 31st. We're anticipating significant changes to those instructions, what we've seen in previous years. We're anticipating an instruction where we'll create a base budget at some percentage of a reduction. We'll probably make it 90% of what our current budget is. That's what we've heard through the grapevine. As soon as we know, we'll pass that on to you all, commissioners, so that you'll understand what the constraints are for building the budget. But right now, our best estimate is there'll be an additional 10% reduction on top of the 5 that we already did in this fiscal year.
You've done it on top of the 5.
Yes, sir. And when we prepare that and follow those instructions, we're anticipating a due date of approximately August 20th, but that's subject to whatever the instructions are. But that would be similar to what it's been in the past. I know I went through this fairly quickly, but I value your time. If you have any questions, if there's anything I could provide, I'd be happy to do so.
Hopefully, many people can make it to the July meeting as we can as we go through and keep going through this budget process.
Yes, sir.
Legislature that's, at least leadership, what now, whether it'll be $18 billion in the hole or whatever the number is today, you know. Yeah.
That's what we've heard from the Speaker of the House with his announcement.
Mr. Chairman, it might be good just for a quick update on the 5% reduction that was asked of the agency. We did get notice back from the Legislative Budget Board regarding the acceptance of most parts of our plan. You know, our total proposed cut was just under $25 million. The legislative, the LBB came back. They've asked us to cut, I think it's 21.7. Approximately 21.7 million. They were particularly interested in seeing about $3 million in capital authority, capital construction authority, largely associated with the Fund 9 divisions, not entirely, but largely associated with it, be restored back, and we look for ways to expend those funds. So the cut was a little bit less than what we had expected, and I wanted to let you know that.
And we did make an inquiry as to what the rationale was. They gave us an exemption for $3.38 million. The Legislative Budget Board analysts did not know. The governor's analysts did not know. So as soon as we know, Carter will know and you all will know, because we were concerned as to what that was tied to.
We're glad to have it back.
Yeah. Be careful how deeply you probe.
Yeah.
Ignorance can be bliss.
Any questions?
I think I covered her portion on the natural agenda. She'll be the next item if you're ready for that.
Okay, so this will be committee item number 3, Julie, is that going to be set?
Yes.
Okay, that'll be the schedule rules, recommended adoption of proposed changes.
Good afternoon. My name is Julie Horsley. I'm in the Planning and Analysis section of the Administrative Resources Division. This item covers a number of different fee issues that affect multiple divisions, And similar to how we presented this at the last commission meeting, rather than have each division come up to the table separately, I'll be presenting all the items on their behalf. And if you have questions at the end, I'll defer to the audience, the staff members in the audience for the responses. The first item is a cleanup that affects several different permits, including the triploid grass carp, scientific research, educational display, zoological collection, and protected non-game sales permits. Currently, in our rules, all of our fee amounts are located in Chapter 53 for permits and licenses. We recently discovered some outdated fee references in other sections of our rules, and this proposal would basically ask that we eliminate those obsolete references to fees in those other sections. The next item is related to fees for falconry permits. Right now, our rules establish fee amounts for apprentice falconry and falconry renewal permits, covering a 1, 2, or 3 year period of validity. And there are some recent changes at the federal level that now allow states to issue falconry permits with a period of validity for up to 5 years. This proposal would establish fee amounts for falconry permits based on a 4 or 5 year term of validity. And the proposed fee amounts don't in any way represent a fee increase. They're merely structured to cover the longer time frame of validity for the permits. The third item deals with fees for department-sponsored events. From time to time, the department sponsors special activities or events and charges a participation fee to either fully recover or partially defray the cost of hosting that event. This proposal would more clearly authorize imposition of such fees by providing generic authority to recover costs for these types of events. And then the fourth item relates to fees that are charged for bat viewing at the Old Tunnel Wildlife Management Area. Regulations currently provide a variety of fee ranges for visitors wanting to access the lower viewing area depending on age or type of group. To simplify fee collection and bookkeeping, the proposed amendment would implement a flat $5 admission fee regardless of age or type of group. And as I mentioned, the fee would be for access to the lower viewing area only. Access to the upper viewing area would still be free of charge. And then the final item relates to deer breeder permit renewal fees. Senate Bill 1586 that was passed last session required the Parks and Wildlife Department to work in conjunction with the Animal Health Commission and develop a shared database for deer breeder information. The bill also specified that the two agencies should provide incentives, among them reduced fees, to deer breeders whose cooperation results in reduced costs and increased efficiency. This proposal would reduce permit renewal fees for deer breeders who file at least 85% of their required information electronically. The reduced fee would be $200 as opposed to the $400 that is currently being charged. We expect that providing this adjusted fee will encourage more deer breeders to use the online system and will also result in greater efficiencies and lower costs to administer the program. The 85% criteria was selected to account for factors beyond the control of the deer breeder, such as technical issues or other unavoidable circumstances that might require them to report certain information over the phone or in hard copy. In terms of public comments, the department received a total of 12 comments on the fee proposals. This slide deals with all of the fee changes except for the deer breeders, so I'll be talking about the deer breeders on the next slide. Six comments supported adoption of all proposed changes. Three comments opposed adoption of all changes, and three comments opposed adoption of specific amendments. Two of the commenters opposed adoption of all the proposed amendments but didn't offer any reason for opposition. One commenter misunderstood the proposed amendment to the falconry fee, believing that the department was proposing to increase fees, which is not the case for those permits. And then two commenters opposed adoption of the amendment to implement a flat $5 fee at the Old Tunnel WMA and stating that it would discourage visitation by families. For the deer breeder proposal, the department received a total of 178 comments. 160 commenters agreed completely with the proposal. 14 disagreed completely. and 14 opposed adoption of specific amendments. Of the commenters that were in complete agreement, most expressed appreciation that the department was working towards greater efficiency and were supportive of the new online system and the fee. As for those disagreeing, either in whole or in part, one commenter said we should just have a flat fee with no discount. Several appeared to oppose deer breeder permits in general and felt that lowering the fee might lead to more permits and or that the fees should be increased rather than decreased in order to discourage the activity. And then one commenter noted that the proposal seems to run counter to the idea that the department is needing to raise more revenue and increasing funding for the department. And that concludes my presentation.
Any discussion or questions by the commission?
Yes, sir. Well, I'm looking at page 55 of the note. Why do we charge $400 for a deer breeder permit and $1,000 for a deer management permit? Why is there such a difference between the two?
I'm going to have to defer.
For the record, my name is Mitch Lockwood, Electric Program Leader and Acting Big Game Program Director. The deer breeder permit fee, $400, is something that is a set in regulation much more recently than the DMP fee was. And with the deer breeder permit fee, we actually increased the fee from, I believe it was $180 to $400. And that increase was based on our calculations and our estimates on the amount of, on the cost to the agency based on our time spent. The DMP permit, rather, that fee was set at an earlier date, and the statute, as I recall, requires that a fee cannot exceed $1,000, and at that time, I do not believe much time went into determining the cost of the agency, and the fee was just set at $1,000 without much justification on what it actually cost the department.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Mitch. There are no further questions or discussion. I will place this item on the Thursday Commission meeting agenda for public comment and action. Committee item number four, advisory committees request permission to publish proposed changes in the sector register. Ms. Ann Wright.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm Ann Wright, General Counsel. As you know, there are a number of requirements that, as a state agency, we have to comply. One of them concerns advisory committees. The Parks and Wildlife Code authorizes the commission chairman to appoint advisory committees. And the government code, Chapter 2110, imposes certain requirements on advisory committees. We have to have a rule for each advisory committee. We have to annually evaluate them. The committee members select the presiding officer. We cannot have more than 24 members on the advisory committee, and they all have a four-year life unless extended by rule. Last year, the commission extended advisory committees for 1 year, so all advisory committees right now will expire on October 1st, 2010. Staff recommends that the following advisory committees be extended for another 4 years, so they would expire October 1, 2014. In the Coastal Fisheries Division, the Coastal Resources Advisory Committee, the Freshwater Fisheries Advisory Board from the Inland Fisheries Division, the Historic Sites Advisory Committee and the State Parks Advisory Committee in the State Parks Division, and then several in the Wildlife Division, one involving bighorn sheep, migratory game birds, private lands, upland game birds, wildlife diversity, and wild-tailed deer. There are a few that are statutorily required. These would not be impacted by the proposal. One of the rules to get basically certified as an agency that trains peace officers is the Game Warden Academy has to have an advisory committee. There's a statutorily established San Jacinto Advisory Board. And then federal law requires that we have a Texas State Trailways Advisory or Trails Advisory Committee as a condition of receiving certain federal funds. So staff recommends permission to publish the proposed rule extending the listed advisory committees for public comment. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments by the commission? If there are no further questions or discussion, I will authorize staff to publish the proposed changes in the official required public comment period. Mr. Chairman, this committee has completed its business.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman Falcone.